Good morning, New Mexico, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company on Cordova Road and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We are podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show whenever you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services, and you can subscribe to the show on iTunes. Later on in the program, we're going to be speaking about the Ticket to Work program, and we're going to be speaking about Stream Team with Wild Earth Guardians. Right now, I would like to welcome Gerald Freed. He is the playwright and composer of a new production that is coming up this next weekend called Morning Time Train. And Nick Patras, who is the star of that show, welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Thanks for sure.
So, Morning Time Train, is it a play or a musical or a play with some music?
Play with some music.
And the story is quite a riveting and compelling one that is taken from your own life.
Mostly.
Tell us a little bit about it.
We lived living up in the Hollywood Hills and had a baby who was premature with a lot of problems. And he had needed surgery on his very first day of life. So, okay.
And this is the early 80s.
This is 82, right. Okay, so the hospital was Cedars-Sinai in the middle of West Hollywood, which is, we didn't know about AIDS then. It was still called GRIDS, or the strange thing from Haiti. So turned out that the baby got a transfusion, which was contaminated.
And with HIV.
HIV, yeah. And we learned the hard way about HIV. Anyway, he was an optimistic kid, and every time I think about him, I think optimistically. He only had 5.5 years, but when he wasn't actually in the intensive care unit, he was having a hell of a good time. I was working at that time for David Wolper and Stan Margulies, and they had a deal with TriStar Pictures. They said, hey, take notes. This could make a good movie, and we'll make it for you. So I took notes and submitted a screenplay. It was optioned, was never made. So then time passed. I moved to Santa Fe.
It must have been strange taking notes on this very poignant chapter of your life.
Strange is a good word. But it also was effective therapy. You know, dealing with it, having it constantly on your consciousness, oddly enough, made it easier. As if, the devil ain't going to get me down by, taking my kid. We'll make something out of it. Anyway, the movie was never made. I came out here a few years ago, decided to turn it into a play. I liked the sense of theater in this town. And sure enough, Santa Fe Performing Arts said, yeah, we'll put it on.
So you basically wrote a new play. I mean, it wasn't probably the same as the screenplay.
It was more like a screenplay than the theater people here wanted. Every 20 minutes they were telling me, Jerry, stop writing movies. This is a theater.
Isn't that funny? What do you mean?
Like, I had a magnificent climax where Griffith Park in Los Angeles. My son loved trains, and there's this Los Angeles Live series. So there are a lot of brush fires there, so I had this magnificent ending where Nate has to rescue, they broke up, the mother and father broke up, and she was trapped in a shed there, she was an artist, and Nate fights off the entire fire to rescue her. See what I mean?
So, making a fire on stage.
Well,
that's special. That's real special effects.
And then we pared that down to the explosion in the shed. That was gas tank exploding, and that was still too big. And then it was a gun. And then what we realized was our conflict was really about the people. And in the movies, it was too quote unquote soft, but on stage it really reads well. And I'm really pleased with the evolution of this story. And I think Jerry has something really real here, and so anytime you're doing a work in progress, it's a different process than just doing, say, a play by Neil Simon, which has already been tried and true on stage. You're constantly getting rewrites, and you have a say in the process, which is exciting as an actor. You can say, this isn't working for me, and say it to the playwright.
And we listen.
And you're there. You're awesome. There listening. Yeah. Now, there's a director, Charles Maynard, and you, Nate Patras, are the star of the play. You are the playwright, Jerry Fried. What was it like? In other words, was it during the process of rehearsal that these rewrites kept getting done?
Yeah, even before, just them reading through the thing, they, you know, these guys who know theater sensed that this got to be changed.
Had you written for theater before?
This is my first straight play. I wrote a lot of libretti for oratorios and operas and things like that. This is my first straight play. So, you know, it behooved me to listen to these guys. They got a sense of theater.
And so did you have to pare down from 25 locations to two or something like that?
Yeah.
That was a big part of it. And also, on theater, you can have a story that maybe in the movies or on film would seem kind of sappy, or it would seem like there's no real conflict, when really the conflict is the people. And it's a little more personal, I think. And you're having a little more personal relationship with your audience. And so what maybe, you know, what Jerry was rewriting this way back when it was a film script, I think, is, you know, it's a much better theater script now, the original concept. And so I think it's a little truer to the actual story, too.
So you play the father of a newborn child, who's basically Jerry Fried, who's sitting right here at the table with us. And this child needs a blood transfusion, and nobody is aware of even the possibility of HIV. But you go down to
give your own blood. Right.
But fate conspires to not let that happen.
That's right. It's basically an old girlfriend and I run into one another, and we dally, and there's a kind of a little romance there just for a minute, and it's just enough to keep me from getting to the blood bank on time. This, of course, creates a huge sense of guilt. You know, not only do am I dealing with the general sense of conflict with my child, surgery, and all that, but and AIDS, which comes on later, we discover later. But the sense of I can't tell Jillian about it because, you know, my wife about it. And so, yeah, I'm carrying around what eventually become ghosts, you know, which eventually come back to haunt me.
And these ghosts show up really as characters on the stage.
Yep.
So we won't give away too much more of it because we don't want to give away the play. It's called Morning Time Train, and it opens on March 27th. And runs that weekend and the following weekend at 8 o'clock on Friday and Saturday and 2 o'clock on Sunday. Is that right?
Yeah.
2 o'clock on Sundays at the Armory for the Arts. So what's the musical aspect of it?
Well, first, before we get into that, I want to follow up on what Nate said about the guilt and the shame.
Yes.
I do understand the social, the tribal functions of guilt and shame, you know, to kind of work against individual instant gratification for the good of the species. But what is painful about it is the cruel anti-life aspects that guilt and shame bring in tow. And that's one of the things that I wanted to write about.
Well, and it's complicated in your piece because there's the guilt and shame of betraying your wife even in a little way, but then when that leads to the death of your own offspring, it suddenly becomes the stakes are raised.
Right. Yeah.
So the music. It's not a musical, so but the wonderful Nate Patras here does get to sing.
I get to sing and play a little guitar, and there's a three-piece band.
Yeah, of which I am a member.
What do you play?
Sax, oboe, and English horn.
Wow. And what are the other two instruments?
Three. Bass, guitar, and drum.
And so what kind of music is it? I mean, is it sort of musical theater style?
I would say no.
No, I think, you know, Gary is somewhat of a folk pop star.
That's your character.
Yes, a character. Yeah. And so I would think of it like you're talking early 80s. I kind of used maybe Kenny Loggins and, you know,
yeah,
as a
right.
kind of a,
James
a template.
Taylor.
James Taylor, yeah. Yeah.
And so he's actually singing because that's what his character does for a living.
Right, yeah. I go on tour, I sing, yeah. I'm a rock star pretty much.
It wasn't at first. I originally wrote the script about a film composer. For obvious reasons.
Now, you are a film composer.
Yeah, yeah. Also, I thought this was... I kind of like this idea. I invented a rock group called Gary and the Truth. Because, you know, his dilemma is all he has to do is tell the truth to his wife and he'll get rid of the ghosts. So it's even more poignant and painful that his group is called Gary and the Truth.
It was called that before his fatal mistake.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We're talking to Jerry Fried and Nate Patras about the upcoming production of Morning Time Train. Tell us more about the train theme.
Oh, my son, Zachary, loved trains. And just about every weekend of his life from the age of three on, when he wasn't sick, we would spend at the... Griffith Park, Los Angeles, live steamers. Bunch of train enthusiasts built model trains big enough for grown-ups to ride on. And it's like a wonderful 20-acre piece of Americana. And Zachary just loved it. And he made friends with the 83-year-old manager of the place. And they became fast friends.
And do trains enter into the actual play?
Yeah. It starts off with him playing on the tracks. Choo, 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 choo.
Zachary's actually played by my daughter, who plays a boy in the play. And it's her first real big show, other than doing some other work with other kids and school stuff. So she is really just right on this. She is very excited. And
very good.
Very interesting. A little cute little girl playing a boy.
Yeah, yeah. Sure. So that was really exciting for me, too, to actually get to work. And, you know, it's a heavy play for a kid. She dies in the show, you know. And the show's not more about the death, but more about the ghosts that haunt us, you know, about guilt and shame, like we were saying earlier. But Jerry asked me at one point, does it bother you, think it's too emotionally engaging for her, you know, dying on stage or, you know. And I said, you know, kids don't even approach this the way us adults do. I think we actually take more baggage. She just is playing. This
right.
is fun for her, you know, and she enjoys all of it. And she just runs with it.
So tell us how you became you were a music student and you became, among other things, a film composer as well as a classical musician.
Yeah. How did that happen?
Yeah.
Do I have time for a story?
Sure.
Okay. I grew up in the Bronx, and my gang, they were called clubs then, was the Barracudas. And this was kind of nerdy guy who wanted to get a game with us playing softball, and the other guys didn't want to let him play. And I said, come on, give him a game, for God's sake. It won't kill us. We gave him a game. He was quite grateful to me. This nerdy kind of guy saved his pennies. He made a short movie. And I was the only musician he knew. He asked me. I was an oboe major at Juilliard at the time. Would you write the music? You know how? I said, of course I know how to write movie music. All oboe players know. You know. So I found out real quick what to do. The picture was sold. I got further jobs as a composer on the basis of this. And he got further jobs in film. And the punchline of the story is that nerd turned out to be Stanley Kubrick.
So that was this kid playing pickup baseball with you.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, so you never know who give a game to everybody is the moral of this story.
Really?
So I did his first five movies, all the ones he did in this country, up to Paths of Glory, and then it was easy to move into the rest of the film business on the strength of that. So I did that for 44 years.
Is that right? Tell us some of the movies that you composed for.
The most famous thing, movies, well, the Stanley Kubrick movies, and then The Bell Jar, the Sylvia Plath story, a lot of the Robert Aldrich movies, and the most famous thing I did in television was the music for Roots.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, for which I picked up an Emmy. Oh, I also got an Oscar nomination for a documentary. The only documentary score that ever was nominated. I didn't win. That was the year 1976, and I was up against Jaws. So Jaws, Jaws swallowed me.
So to speak. How'd you end up in Santa Fe?
In the mid-90s, I was divorced, and from the mother of Zachary, by the way, we didn't make it.
I was going to say, I've heard many stories about the illness and or death of a child being too much for a couple to make it through.
You would think that such an experience is the biggest bonding agent you could imagine.
But it isn't always.
No. Any case, don't ask me how this movie ends, because I won't tell you.
The reality movie, or what? Which movie are you talking about?
Morning Time Train. Did I say movie? Meant play. No, I meant play. You know, I like the Charlie Chaplin theory of movie making or of playwriting. You know, keep them laughing. That's the best way. If you want to get across a serious point, if you want to even sneak in a lecture, if the audience is laughing, you stand a much better chance. So this I consider a comedy. The three ghosts that haunt Nate are practically zanies, like in a Jacobin drama. They're all over the place. They're in his face. They crawl all over him. This poor guy has to put up with it.
And so this is happening next weekend, the 27th, 28th, 29th. But you never told us how you got to Santa Fe. You were divorced.
Oh, okay. I see in my high school alumni book that the love of my teenage life from high school is a goldsmith in Santa Fe. She was widowed, so for a few years we sniffed each other out. And she was so Santa Fe by this time, she couldn't possibly move back to Los Angeles or New York. So I was just writing my own things then. I wasn't doing movie work. So I moved out here.
And so here you are, Morningside Train.
Yeah. She unfortunately died after me living a year here. But
heavens.
But just like your path to becoming a media person was through, you know, a circuitous, that was my way of meeting my present wife.
Gerald Fried is the playwright and music composer in the play Morningside Train. Nick Patras is the star of that. Charles Maynard, who's not with us right now, is the director.
And excuse me.
Yes.
He's ill, so Rachel Peck has taken over. So they're both the directors.
So it opens on March 27th and runs the 27th, 28th, 29th, and then April 3rd, 4th, and 5th at 8 o'clock on Fridays and Saturdays, and 2 o'clock on Sundays at the Armory for the Arts on Old Pecos Trail in Santa Fe. There's a gala opening on opening night, and if you would like more information and to buy tickets, you can call 984-1370. Jerry and Nate, thanks so much for being with us on the Santa Fe Radio Cafe.
Oh, thank you so much.
Pleasure.
We're going to take a break right now. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned to KSFR.